Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 14th of January. A tale of two drug wars as Washington and Colorado create rules and regulations for selling legal marijuana. In many other cities across the country, pot arrests are near record highs. Bruce Barcott is the author of that piece, which appears in the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine, and he is our guest this hour. He traveled to Colorado, traveled to Washington. Colorado retail marijuana stores opened on January 1st or 2nd, I guess. And in Washington, the first of the shops will open late this spring. But as he writes, there's a dismal reality playing out in many other states. If you encounter a police officer in New Orleans, you could face 20 years hard labor if you have marijuana in your possession. However, if you're in Seattle, a police officer may help you if you drop it on the ground, sweep it up, he writes. Bruce is a very accomplished writer and has many areas of interest. He is an environmental journalist. His articles on humans and wildlife appear in Outside Magazine, National Geographic, The New York Times. He reviews nonfiction for The New York Times Book Review, Outside, and On Earth Magazine. He's right now working on a narrative history of the battle over salmon and treaty rights in the Pacific Northwest, and he's the author of several books. We'll be welcoming phone calls on marijuana this hour of the program. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Bruce. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Great to be here.
It was a fascinating article because it looked at both of these important issues as an industry, but also what's happening with disparity and sentencing, which we'll get to in a moment. But first, this industry itself, this absolutely flabbergasted me. Legal marijuana, you write, estimated right now to be a $1.43 billion industry, legal marijuana. And next year, holy Toledo, it's going to go up even more.
Absolutely. The $1.43 billion with a B would encompass all of the 20 states and Washington, D.C., which right now allow medical marijuana. And the spike, I think probably maybe a 60% jump they're talking about over the next year, will come about because of adult use marijuana in Colorado and Washington State. So it's one of the nation's fastest growing industries right now.
Mm-hmm. And the other part of the article, let's spend a little bit of time on this. We'll get into it more later during our discussion of this. The other, as you call it, dismal reality is that there's this huge racial disparity and people are getting busted for possession of very small amounts of marijuana. And in some cases, if you're black, you're more likely to get busted and you could serve a lot of time.
Absolutely. You know, one of the I guess that's the main dichotomy in the article is that, you know, if you go into an adult use store in Colorado, I went into an adult use store the first week it was opened. I bought two joints for $7 each.
Whoa.
I walked out, and that's Denver right now. At the same time, there is, you know, I came across a gentleman who is my same age in Louisiana who was arrested for essentially carrying the same amount of marijuana, about two or three joints, a couple years ago. Was arrested in New Orleans. He's now serving 13 and a third years in state prison.
Wow. And there is a huge racial disparity in the sentencing as well, in the arrest, actually.
Yeah, there was an amazing report that the ACLU put out last year that basically went through and looked at the chances of a black man versus a white man getting arrested for marijuana, for possession. And in basically nationwide, they found that a person of color was four times as likely to be arrested for pot possession as a white person. And that's, you know, in some parts of the country, it's as much as 10 or 11 times disparity.
You say in the article that if things go well in Colorado and Washington, we may be beginning to see a real change in the way we prosecute marijuana arrests and in the whole area, right?
Yeah, I think so. What's going on now is we've had the first stage of pilot programs with marijuana, and that was basically the medical marijuana stage from when California started back in 1996 to today. And so we tried that, you know, in 20 states now, and the world hasn't come crashing down. So now we're proceeding with the next step, which is adult use, highly regulated marijuana. And I think unless Washington and Colorado absolutely blow it, there are a number of states lining up for November 2016 ballot to try it themselves. We've got looking at Arizona, Maine, Montana, Nevada, Massachusetts, Missouri, Wyoming, and the big one, which is California.
Tell me about your experience in Colorado, not yet in Washington, because it hasn't happened. What did you do? You could just go into a store that sells joints, or it sells bags of marijuana, or how?
Yeah,
how does
it's
it happen?
It's in Colorado. What they did in Colorado was they already had they'd done the hard work of regulating their medical marijuana industry back in 2011. They kind of got swept away a lot of the bad actors. It's highly regulated. It's a pretty good system. And so they basically kind of flipped the switch on a few medical marijuana dispensaries and allowed them to go adult use retail. There were, I think, maybe 10 or 11 in Denver. So on January 1st, you know, there were people camped in tents outside of marijuana shops in Denver. I showed up at one at 6:37 in the morning. And they made the first legal sale at 8 a.m. In Denver, they're only allowed to be open from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. And for that entire day, there were people in line. You know, you saw them on the TV, three, right, four, five deep, waiting to purchase. It's basically like a high-end liquor store, a high-end tobacco shop. I mean, there's a glass counter. There are a number of bud tenders behind the counter. I went to Medicine Man Dispensary in Denver, which is the largest in Denver. I think it's the largest in the state. And they had probably, I think, about eight bud tenders with computers, cash registers. And they had a line moving through that was essentially like a line at the airport, you know, where there's a person that they had a line saying, okay, go to number two. Okay, go to clerk number three. Okay, number four is open now. And people would go over and most people, you know, I did a back of the envelope calculation. I figured that place was moving, you know, about 100 people an hour through the line. Most people were laying down, you know, $60 to $100 a piece. They could have been doing, you know, about $100,000 worth of business in that one day.
Which means somebody is making a lot of money.
Somebody's making a lot of money. It's funny, you know, there is definitely a gold rush mentality in Washington and Colorado now, in the sense that there are a lot of people who have moved to the state to try to get into this industry. There's a lot of young people who are attracted to Denver and Seattle right now because of that. But at the same time, it's not easy to get into. The regulatory hurdles are pretty steep, and it requires money to get into the business. You can't just come in and set up your own shop with $500 and go out the door.
How do people know? I found this part of the article fascinating, that there have not been a whole lot of studies done on the effects of marijuana on the body, because it hasn't been legal really to do those kinds of studies. As a result, they're selling marijuana, is this fair to say, in these regulated places. But we're not sure how they decided how many milligrams of, what's the thing that gets you high?
THC.
THC.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is where sort of the rubber met the road in terms of the federal government's decision years ago, and it has continued to this day, to pretty much disallow all research on marijuana and the effects of smoking the plant or ingesting the plant. It's, you know, there are a few studies that are okayed by the federal government, but it's almost impossible to simply do a study to figure out what the effects of smoking are on the body. And so, you know, when it came time to lay down, you know, milligrams of THC or percentage of THC in the plant, in terms of how the state would regulate this, they, you know, were not quite pulling a number out of the hat. But look, the number in Colorado is 100 milligrams of THC per serving or per package. You know, the roundness of that number should tell you something about the fact that we're just sort of throwing a number up there and trying to hit it, you know?
Right. So will there be studies?
I think there will be. I'm talking with you from Seattle, and here at the University of Washington, they have just set up a program to start doing some of the first real, I think, in-depth research about the effects of marijuana on the body. There was some research done in California years ago. The key was you had to kind of do it within the parameters of the state. If there were any federal monies involved, you run into real problems quite quickly. It's still difficult. These sort of entrenched marijuana prohibitionists are still there in D.C. They're still there in the federal government, and it's still well-nigh impossible to study this stuff.
Hmm. So it could be the case, not necessarily that it will be the case, but it could be the case that smoking marijuana simply isn't very good for you.
It could be. I mean, we're what we do know, I think, after, you know, 75 years of marijuana prohibition and anecdotal evidence, personal experience, you know, there is some research out there. A lot of it is coming from Israel, of all places. We do know that it's not nearly as bad for you as we once thought. I think that, you know, I had to, in writing about this, I have a 12-year-old son and a 15-year-old daughter, and so I had to talk with them about it. You know, I think these are conversations we're all going to have in the coming years. And I said, you know, for a long time, we thought marijuana was a part of this category, like heroin and cocaine and LSD, that were just, you know, these were hard drugs. They caused a lot of damage to people in society. And I said, you know, over time, I think a lot of people have come to believe that marijuana belongs more in the category of alcohol, where it's a problematic substance. It gets you intoxicated, but reasonable adults can find a way to handle it without causing havoc to themselves and to society. And that's what we're trying right now, is to handle it that way. Because the other way hasn't worked. The other way has ruined too many lives in terms of putting people into jail for long stretches of time for a substance that just doesn't correlate with those other drugs.
So that's the way you present. It sounds essentially like the way you would present the use of alcohol to a discussion about this with your children. What did they say?
Yeah,
what did they say to
they're
you?
Sort of, they're interested, they're fascinated, and they're horrified all at the same time, you know. They're not quite to the age where they're running into a huge amount of peer pressure yet to try alcohol or pot or anything like that. But, you know, we're keeping the discussion open, and they see me and my wife have a glass of wine at dinner, and we talk about what that means and those sorts of things. But, you know, it's funny, that conversation is going on in our house with our kids, but at the same time, I'm kind of having to feel out or figure out how, you know, marijuana is going to fit in or not fit in with, you know, the adult culture around me, the adult society around me. You know, when you go to a party of adults, is it okay if somebody breaks out some marijuana in some form? I don't know yet. We're trying to figure that out.
Right. Well, it would only be okay in Colorado and Washington, right?
Right. But even then, sort of, you know, socially, is it still okay? Are you, you know, is it
right.
Like, is it like smoking tobacco, or, you know, it's cool, but just look, John, do it on the porch, right? So we're all trying to figure that out at this point. And we're also trying to figure out what, for those who, you know, haven't been imbibing in marijuana, if you want to try it, you're going to have to try to sort of figure out what your new tolerance level is.
Right.
It's like trying alcohol for the first time in a way.
Right. So will there be rules, as there are, concerning smoking, that you won't be able to have marijuana on the sidewalk in front of your building? Or?
Yeah, that's one of the things that both Colorado and Washington went in for a very a regulatory scheme very similar to alcohol. And so just like you can't walk down the sidewalk in Seattle drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels, neither can you walk down smoking a joint or imbibing in any other obvious way. You know, there have been events in Seattle and Colorado and where, you know, it's where marijuana has been part of the event, but they have, you know, there are signs up saying, look, you cannot do this in public. You have to be in a private space, this sort of thing. And it's that's still getting figured out. But it's like I say, we're stumbling and bumbling our way into this. I think we're doing a pretty good job, but you know, a new question arises every day around here.
Right. You write that big tobacco and alcohol are licking their chops at the emerging marijuana industry. Have both of those industries jumped right in here, or are they just thinking about it?
No, this is what's interesting. They're both industries are very, very publicly quiet about marijuana. But I was back in D.C. a couple months ago, and I had a great long conversation with Alan St. Pierre, who's the director of NORML, the old marijuana reform group back there. And he told me he had taken some really interesting meetings, just, you know, lunch or coffee with folks who work for you know, the distilled spirits industry, the wine industry, and the beer industry. And those folks were kind of very interested to try to figure out what impact marijuana legalization was going to have on their products, whether, you know, this is something they should consider getting into years down the road. One of the things he told me was you know, think of it like, you know, if you're in the beer industry, maybe you're customer has $20, $25 at the end of every week. Well, you want a good portion of that $25 to go into a 6-pack or a 12-pack of beer. Maybe that customer now wants a 6-pack of beer and a little bit of maybe a gram of marijuana, something like that. So you still want to kind of capture that portion, that segment of the market, that sort of what Alan called it, complicated adult commerce or difficult adult commerce, you know. Like I said, they're watching it very carefully. Nobody's jumping in with both feet. They can't at this point because of the financial regulations in Colorado and Washington. And I think they're also very comfortable letting the pioneers go ahead and fail and let the market sort out sort of what's going to be a success before they jump in.
We welcome phone calls, and here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk@WPR.org, Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Bruce Barcott is our guest this hour, and he's written a fascinating piece that appears in the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine, A Tale of Two Drug Wars, as Washington and Colorado create rules and regulations for selling legal marijuana. In many other cities across the country, pot arrests are near record highs. All I had to do is give the phone number and our phones have gone crazy. So obviously your participation will not be a problem in this hour. Do you think that marijuana should be legalized? We should have shops in every state in the country. And if so, under what kinds of restrictions, if any, how is it regulated? What about taxes? And you can also address certainly the issue of the huge disparity in racial sentencing and arrests for marijuana possession. To your phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Bruce Barcott. 800-486-8655 is our number. And Joe in Oshkosh, our first caller. Hi, Joe.
Are you there?
Yes, Joe. Hi. Go right ahead.
Thanks. Well, I'm a proponent for legalization and/or lifting of restrictions, but there is one critical thing in this. You know, as these laws tend to be relaxed, there will inevitably be an increase in use by both adults and kids. So. One way, a long-term approach to curb this and eventually get this incorporated into society, but this is a big hurdle, will be the strict limitations of advertising. There should be no glamorization of this whatsoever, except for perhaps point-of-sale advertising and word of mouth. But I'm afraid that, you know, since this is going to be viewed as another legal commodity, that you're going to have all kinds of libertarian folks lobbying for, and not to mention, you know, alcohol and drug companies down the road, because they're, you know, as you mentioned, licking their chops, especially if they can advertise. But there's going to be all kinds of hurdles to this. But, and this is obviously an issue of free speech, but it's a critical one, because there's got to be some limitations on substances which are psychoactive and can potentially be dependency producing, et cetera. You know, granted, we've already have alcohol, but this is a good place to start. And you know, we limit free speech in terms of, you know, things like yelling fire in a theater. So there is a way to do this the right way, and that is to limit advertising. But I'm curious as to what restrictions in Colorado there exist right now for advertising. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm more familiar with the restrictions in my own state here in Washington, but I know that that both states are hugely restrictive in terms of advertising. In Washington state, it's restrictive even in terms of the signage on the store. I mean, I think it's down to the foot and the inch in terms of what sort of sign you can have advertising your business. I think that's a critical part of legalization and regulation. You know, one of the ways that these measures passed in Washington and Colorado was, in a way, the substitution of the word regulation for legalization. I think, you know, legalization has all the connotations of freedom and also chaos. But regulation, when you bring that word in, all of a sudden people think about, yeah, well, you know, that's interesting, because we regulate alcohol in a certain way. We regulate tobacco in a certain way. And the regulation of advertising was not an enormous selling point, but it was one of many selling points in Colorado and Washington to the voters, and that's being carried out. I think there's going to be just, you know, little to none in terms of advertising in those two states. It's just the key, I think, and you touched on it, was to make sure that that continues, because I think as this industry grows, it's going to have a larger lobbying presence in the state houses and in D.C., and that's where the risk comes in terms of that sort of lobbying leading to a relaxation of advertising laws. I think we've done a really good job. You know, the tobacco industry is a good model to look to in terms of how we've regulated advertising in that industry. I think that's the way to go.
Megan in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I had two quick points. One, I understand for marketing purposes, but I kind of wish that we weren't comparing marijuana to alcohol and tobacco so much, because both of those have proven over hundreds of years that they cause deaths and breaking up families. And marijuana, I think that we will find out that it doesn't have those same effects. And also, just my other point is that I don't think everyone is going to go crazy as soon as marijuana is legalized, because I'd say more than half of the people who want to be smoking marijuana anyway are even still while it's illegal. And it's just, it's sad that we have to go about it in illegal ways to do it, when we can go out and buy a six-pack of beer and then, you know, drink and drive and get how many DUIs. And I guess that's just my two points.
Thanks, Megan.
Yeah, Megan, it's an interesting point. The one of the reasons I think that medical marijuana worked as a pilot project was, first of all, there was and is a real need for a number of patients to find a way to receive medical marijuana and take it in a medical way. But at the same time, you know, you can't deny that a certain amount of folks who use the medical marijuana system are using it to get recreational pot. At the same time, so if that's a given, though, you know, there are a lot of people who are already using marijuana recreationally in a quasi-legal way, and, you know, crime sprees haven't jumped up in those cities. We're not seeing mass deaths due to marijuana overdoses. I mean, I think that we're still waiting to see any marijuana overdose death at all. So, you know, That's one way in which I think that's what we saw play out in Denver, where it you know, there were a lot of people in line, but the city didn't come to a crashing halt.
What about our ability to drive? Can we be impaired? Do we know how much we should be smoking in order to how much we should limit it to make sure that our reflexes are where they should be? And
yeah,
also, what about being able to test somebody for DUI under pot influence?
That's really where the lack of research on marijuana and its effects on the body, it becomes just simply insane. Mm. We really need to know this information. We really need to know how to measure marijuana's effect on the body, on the brain, and its relation to the ability to drive. Colorado and Washington have set fairly strict and low, and proper limits in terms of impaired driving due to marijuana. But that's another area where they've sort of picked a number and gone with it. And there's a big difference in terms of what different people can tolerate, their experience, their body mass, all this sort of thing. That's simply a black box because of the lack of research.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the conversations that Attorney General Eric Holder had with the governors of both Washington and Colorado, and also about this Senator Patrick Leahy, Rand Paul legislation calling for reform of the mandatory minimum sentences.
That was interesting. It was one part of the article that I really tried to track down. I thought, Washington and Colorado passed these measures in November of 2012, and Attorney General Holder basically said, we're going to think about our response to this and we'll get back to you. And they didn't get back, and they didn't get back, and months passed, and months passed. And I had assumed going in that, there was a lot of conversation between the Attorney General's office and the two governors. The funny thing was that there wasn't really. I mean, what the two governors did, Jay Inslee in Washington and John Hickenlooper in Colorado, their staff members sort of just kept feeding information to their local U.S. attorneys and to the folks at the Justice Department in D.C. about what they were doing, how they were progressing in terms of setting up their regulatory schemes, how they were addressing things like, we need to make sure that every pot shop is at least 1,000 feet from a school or playground, and then that sort of thing. And they fed that information, just sort of, wanted to keep Department of Justice apprised, and really didn't hear back until late August of last year, when the Attorney General finally came in and said, okay, we're going to allow this to go ahead, but here are some things that we really are going to keep a sharp eye on. Mm. And a lot of those things had to do with underage access, with kids and keeping it away from kids. How Patrick Leahy and Rand Paul come into it is they sort of form a strange kind of libertarian coalition on this issue, where Patrick Leahy over the summer made a few statements to the effect that, look, I'm sure the Department of Justice has higher priorities in this, in the coming year than to clamp down on Washington and Colorado. And Rand Paul comes at the issue from a libertarian perspective, where, adults should be able to decide for themselves. And he's sort of made similar noises and they have floated ideas about passing some sort of legislation to allow states to handle this on their own, which in a way I think is, if it goes legal nationwide, is the way it would go, which is essentially the federal government wouldn't come in and declare it legal everywhere. They would simply say every state can lay out their own rules, just like with alcohol.
Let's go next to Dave in Spring Green. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. A couple quick points I'd like to make is, in comparison with alcohol and tobacco, if you look at the Centers for Disease Control Morbidity and Mortality report from January 10th, it shows that about every 19 minutes an American dies from prescription drug overdose, and about every 5.9 minutes an American dies from alcohol, excessive use of alcohol. Now, marijuana has been legal under medical auspices and as well as recreational for the last year in Colorado and Washington, and there still is no reported death. So marijuana is objectively safer than either one of these, either pharmaceuticals or alcohol. One second quick point I'd like to make is that in Wisconsin, you know, in these states that have legalized, business is rolling out. There's data companies, there's security companies, and a lot of different businesses that are being afforded the opportunity to start up with these laws. In Wisconsin, we're being left in the dust. We're not even allowed to consider this. So the entrepreneurs in Wisconsin are getting left behind. And that's the 2 points I'd like to make.
All right. Thanks so much for the call.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, as you say, you know, the entrepreneurs in Colorado and Washington, it's a booming industry out there. You know, the people I've talked to who are heading up companies, they get dozens of resumes every day from people, not only
really?
Young people in the U.S., but all over the world. Yeah, they get resumes from people from India saying, you know, I'm an IT expert. What can I do? You know, what can I do for you? And it's funny, though. Colorado and Washington, everybody in those states, they're sort of aware of the fact that their window is limited. You know, there's a big belief that once California goes legal in 2016 or 17, that a lot of their mojo is going to be stolen by the Golden State, mm-hmm. that the big entrepreneurial spirit will flood into California.
Hmm. And you also say that these states and the other states that may legalize before President Obama leaves office have until he leaves office to see if this experiment is going to work, because that it could all change with the new administration, couldn't it?
It could. You know, if President Obama and Eric Holder wanted to end this experiment, they could overnight. But they have said, okay, look, we're going to allow it to go ahead. We're going to see what happens. We're going to watch it carefully. So essentially, these two states have until January 2017 to prove to the rest of the country that they can handle it, that it can work, and it's a better that it not only can work, but it's a better alternative to pot prohibition. Because whoever is coming into office in January of 2017, you know, they're going to have a decision. They could, you know, end it an hour after being sworn into office.
Right.
So it's a big chance.
Lynn Eau Claire, hello.
Hello, Kathleen. I'm looking at the regulation of marijuana from a couple of different views. First and foremost is my second son is a policeman who in California. And as he's a sheriff's deputy, and he goes on drug busts and raids, and it's terrifying and very, very dangerous work. And I mean, there's the cartels, and there's just so much that could take my son from me for something so. So in the scheme of things, minor. And he says to him, and I also live in a world of pain. And my son says, Mom, if people like you, responsible adults, would use marijuana to control your pain because it's a bad law, my job would be easier. My life in this aspect wouldn't be put on the line. All right, and with my pain situation, I am, because of the severity of my pain, forced into a contract with the medical community and fed opioids that are it's my option. That's my option. Or an implanted pump into my spine, which I'm not going to do. Thirdly, I lost two brothers to alcohol. And as with alcohol, you should not drive under the influence of marijuana, because you drive extremely slow and everything is funny, and it shouldn't happen. There's responsibilities that should be followed with using anything that impairs your judgment.
Yeah. Thank you, Lynn, so much for your call.
Yeah. Thanks, Lynn. You know, it's funny, the issue of opioids is a sort of a subtext in a lot of conversations about marijuana, and especially medical marijuana nowadays. You know, the first official purchase of recreational marijuana in Denver was actually by a fellow who needed it for medical purposes. He's an Iraq war veteran who uses it to control his PTSD. And, you know, I've talked to him, and in one of the next articles I'm working on is about American war veterans and marijuana. And for him and a lot of his fellow veterans, you know, marijuana is has become, in their eyes, a healthier alternative to the opioids that the Veterans Administration and other doctors have tried to put them on to help alleviate their pain and their PTSD syndrome. I don't know enough about it to say that that's right or that's wrong, but that's something that that is sort of a recurring theme nowadays.
As you stood in line, I'm sure you had conversations with some of the hundreds of people who were in line in Colorado on January 2nd. Can you give me a description of how old people were, why they were there, what they were using marijuana for?
It's funny that, you know, during the first week, you had a lot of, you know, people in their 20s, and they were out there partly because they were excited about making history. They saw our the sort of war on drugs and drug laws, especially as related to marijuana, as being unjust, and they were excited that they had finally been overturned. But, you know, it was and I think most people in line, you know, had used marijuana or were using marijuana, you know, had used in the last week or last month or so. So it wasn't a huge, you know, cross section of society. There were a number of older people, but marijuana still tends to be a very heavily male, young industry and a young substance. I think one of the, you know, there was that infamous David Brooks column, I think last week, where he wrote that, you know, marijuana was something I aged out of quickly.
Yes.
And it's true. Partly it's true because, in a way, you know, the young or folks in their 20s have the time to, you know, indulge in marijuana. I'm in my 40s. I've got two kids. I've got a career and stuff
right.
to do.
Well,
I don't have a week. I can't give a weekend to laying on the couch, you know. and so, you know, it goes back to part of that social dynamic where, you know, now I have pretty easy access to this substance, but it's not something that's a part of my life, and it's not something I can have the opportunity to use and enjoy as maybe I did in college or in my 20s.
Yeah, I fully understand. Lynn, thank you so much for the call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking this hour with Bruce Barcott. He has a very interesting piece, current issue of Rolling Stone magazine, that looks at the legalization of marijuana. Shops opening January 2nd in Colorado will open this spring in Washington. That looks at that and the whole industry that is surrounding that, but it couples it also with pot arrests being at near record high and a huge racial disparity among those arrests. More phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow after 2, we'll be speaking with a UW Eau Claire professor who's written a new book to empower tweens and teens to combat cyberbullying. He hopes it will make schools safer and let children take the matter into their hands instead of leaving it to adults. That's tomorrow after 2 o'clock. Back to phone calls. Joe in Franklin is next. Hi, Joe. Joe, are you there? Joe is gone. Let's go to another Joe, Joseph in Hartford. Hi.
Hi. I want to be very brief and quote Dr. Sanjay Gupta. I've seen amazing individual cases of children with life-threatening seizure disorders that can be kept under control only with the use of a certain strain of cannabis, taken by mouth, not smoked. Now, as the pharmaceutical industry given any indication of coming on board with this? And wouldn't a pill be a lot better way of measuring it? And I'll take it off the air. Thank you, Joseph.
Yeah, that's a whole can of worms, Joseph. There is a sort of pill form of marijuana, of THC, put out by GW Pharmaceuticals. It's a company based in England. But you know, it's not something that I've tried or taken or anything, but people who have taken it for medical reasons have told me that sometimes it works, but sometimes, you know, the effects are very different than what they get from ingesting marijuana in a in an edible form or by smoking it or in some other way. You know, the one of the things I think you mentioned was the idea that seizures can be calmed both in adult patients, but also in children. And we're learning more about the science of THC and another cannabinoid called CBD. And CBD tends to be sort of the one that I think a lot of medical researchers are very excited about in terms of its possibilities and also in terms of separating it from the THC high. There's a great strain of marijuana that's called Charlotte's Web, and it's the one that has been bred for huge CBD content and very low THC content. So you get the medical effects of CBD without the THC high, and that's the one that, you know, a lot of children have found, you know, great hope in, or their parents have. And it's funny because I was reading about this the other day, that basically Charlotte's Web was a grand hybrid disaster when it was first bred. It was you know what its original name was?
What?
Hippie's Disappointment.
Oh my gosh.
Because it had, you know, such low THC, but all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, you know, it's got this low THC, high CBD, so, you know, it could be good for this other use.
Yeah.
And I think there's could be a lot of that coming out in the next few years.
Carol in Oak Creek, hi.
Hi, thank you very much. I agree with your previous caller. We do need designated drivers when using anything that impairs you. My brother was killed by a drunk driver, but I have a few points to make. I think it is high time we legalize marijuana. Marijuana is safer than alcohol. You never hear about fights breaking out over people using marijuana. You're wasting police time chasing pot dealers when there's so many more serious issues to deal with. Some of our founding fathers, like George Washington, grew marijuana. There's nothing wrong with using marijuana responsibly. Those are my comments. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
You know, there's been a couple of recent articles about pot dealers and the idea that the black market will still survive and thrive in Colorado and Washington because they'll be able to undercut the price of the market. And one of the things I did when I was in Denver is I tried to kind of keep an eye out for that. And on the second day, I tell you, I was at the end of a line, a two-hour line at one pot shop in Denver. And there was an old-fashioned weed dealer at the end of the line. He was standing there, and he had a baggie of about, I think it was, what was it, probably an eighth of an ounce, you know, which sells for, I think, $45 bucks in the pot shop. And he had it there and in all its sort of ragged glory. He was shaking it at people at the end of the line saying, you can wait in line here or you can buy this from me. And people were looking at his bag of weed and shaking their head and saying, no, man, you know what? I'm going to wait in line. So I think there's an interesting thing that may go on where it's not just price that makes a difference in terms of withering that black market, but rather quality and convenience that Allison Holcomb, the person who wrote the law in Washington, said, you know, most people want to obey the law. If you give them a chance to be legal or illegal, they'll choose to be legal.
Right.
And I think that's true. And also, you know, quality is a factor. We don't buy illegal beer on the corner because it's a buck cheaper than buying a six-pack of Budweiser.
How much did you say those joints were? $7 a piece?
They were $7. They were $7 a piece. They were individually packaged in a child-proof container.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
But you said that the prices, say a year from now, could be dramatically different, right?
They could. Nobody really knows where price will go. There's a cap right now on the volume that can be grown in both states. So, you know, if pot shops start to run out of product, that price will go up. On the other hand, if there's a surplus, it might go. The price might go down. Nobody's really sure what's going to happen to the price. I mean, both states are taxing it at a fairly high rate. I think Colorado's at 25% and Washington, I think the minimum is probably about 55.0%. But yeah, the price is still anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. Stanley in Watertown. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Number one, I'm surprised that a station like yours, who that's used to quality radio, would even talk in about hallucinogenic drugs. Number one, a drug addicted person is not hired by any company to work. Secondly, smoking causes lung cancer. In addition, you know that something like this, all it's going to do is to make the population of this country in a position where they no longer have clear minds to invent and to do things and to advance. I just don't understand how any normal, reasonable person can get excited about the use of something that's going to degrade society. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Stanley, for the call. Bruce.
Fair enough. I mean, look, there is a good portion of the population that agrees with Stanley. I will say this. You know, I think that there is a feeling in the country right now that we are revisiting some issues that were formerly considered taboo and so dangerous that we couldn't let them out of this box. You know, one of them is marijuana and the other is gay marriage. And in both cases, we had sort of pilot projects that went ahead with gay marriage. We had civil unions and this sort of thing to kind of test the waters and see how it went. You know, I think with the argument that was just put forward with marijuana is similar to the argument that is put forward with gay marriage, where, oh, if we allow gay marriage, you know, we're going to have to allow polygamy. And who's to say that 9-year-olds can't get married and this sort of thing. But I think there's a big pushback in the country right now where people are saying, hey, you know what, we are adults and we have a sense of responsibility toward all sorts of actions and activities. We set limits. We set limits on driving. We set limits on alcohol. We're going to be able to set limits here that are reasonable and right. And if we touch this idea or this substance, it doesn't mean we're opening the Pandora's box. We can handle it in a reasonable adult fashion.
Mm-hmm. What about his point that smoking marijuana can cause lung cancer? Is that true?
I don't know. I think that's still an area that we could use a lot of research on. I hate to say, you know, time will tell, but it's you know, there are plenty of marijuana advocates out there who will tell you, no, smoking doesn't cause cancer like tobacco causes cancer. I'm a little skeptical of that argument. I think that taking any sort of smoke into your lungs is generally not good for the lungs. So I would like to see a lot more data on that. I'm a little leery of smoking this substance for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's another reason why part of the industry is moving away from smoking and more toward everything from vaporizing, which is like an e-cigarette, to edibles and things like that. With smoking also, you know, the smell is a problem. This mm-hmm. stuff really reeks. You know, you can't hide it when you smoke it.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, thank you so much. It was really an interesting article in your article was terrific. Thanks for being with us.
Terrific. It's a pleasure, Kathleen. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Bruce Barcott, his piece on marijuana, which is legal now. That's why we're talking about it in Colorado and in the state of Washington. The money that's involved here, and we're also looking at racial disparity in sentencing. We're not advocating for one thing or another. We're just talking about what's going on. Bruce is a very avid writer. He's an environmental journalist. He writes about humans and wildlife in Outside Magazine, National Geographic, New York Times, and many other publications. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production. Tomorrow, first hour of our program, we're going to be looking at Al-Qaeda. How strong is Al-Qaeda, and how troublesome was it to so many when the Al-Qaeda banner went up in Ramadi and Fallujah in Iraq a few days ago? Great conversations ahead. Thank you for listening to ours this afternoon. It's about a minute now before 3, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.